Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the RV Podcast. And this week, the truth about RV dealers and how much of a discount you really should expect when you buy a new one right off the lot.
Never have I paid MSRP, and I've never met anybody who did. So it is a discounted price. It is negotiable, and it depends if you're not trading in a unit, 25-30% off of the manufacturer's suggested list price is a fair price for the consumer and still allows the dealer to make good money.
It's time for the RV Podcast. Traveling North America in an RV. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of RV reporters.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 255 of the RV Podcast. And this week we get the inside secrets about RV dealers, how much they should be willing to discount, how much your brand new RV depreciates the moment you drive it out of the lot, why it can sometimes be so hard to find good service, and what upsells they'll try and talk you into, like extended warranties and insurance that maybe you don't need. Our guest is the straight-talking Bob Zagami of the New England RV Dealers Association, and you'll not want to miss his interview. Also this week, your questions, RV news, tips, and another great off-the-beaten-path report from our friends the Burkitts. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer, hello, my dear.
Hello, my Michael.
Well, this episode being recorded, put together for you from the Holly State Recreation Area near Holly, Michigan. We're doing some camping with our daughter, Wendy, son-in-law, Dan, and our grandkids, Wawa and Rachel. 13 and 16. So we're having some fun summer family time in
and
the camper.
And don't forget the new addition to the family.
Oh, yes.
Mickey,
their new golden doodle.
It was about 4.5 months.
And totally black. I don't know why they call him
a
golden.
And a little white on his chest.
A little white. I don't know why they call him a... we'll put some
he
pictures up.
He is a golden doodle, but he's, he's black.
If you're around, you'll see some pictures on our
cute
Instagram account. You can follow us on Instagram at RV Lifestyle Mike. We'll put some pictures of Charlie. Bo's going to be showing
Not Charlie. Him. Charlie's gone.
Charlie's the old one. That's right. Mickey. Yeah,
this is Mickey.
Thank you. We'll pick some pictures of... Charlie was their old dog. We'll put some pictures of Mickey... as Bo introduces them to the world of RVing, and we'll put those up on Instagram and have fun. But it's always good to be out camping together. That's a big part of our family, has been since Wendy was a little baby girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she loves it just as much as we do.
Yep, she does. She really does. It's been a busy week, as they all are, I guess. They all are. We were in Holland, Michigan this past week at the... spent a couple of days up over in western Michigan, and we were at the Holland Motorhomes. It's a dealership. They sell buses and lots of motorhomes. They're a leisure travel van dealer, and we did a couple of projects. We had a new ladder put on the back since I had been climbing up on a step ladder, and you know that's a little rickety. You all heard the story a couple of weeks ago, and I slipped off the ladder, so...
I got to tell you, our 4-year-old granddaughter thought that ladder looked wonderful. She was very intrigued by it.
Yes, she did. Jovi, our son Jeff's granddaughter, she saw the ladder after we had it installed. But they put a ladder on the back, and you know, there's a really good reason to have it. I mean, I want to clean off the solar panels and, you know, brush off leaves and debris that accumulate up there. We have an oak tree where it's parked right now, and there's acorns dropping all over the roof.
Well, some RVs come with a ladder already attached.
Yep.
For some reason, this one didn't.
This one didn't, and we put it on, and I'm thrilled with it. It's good, and I got all my electronic gear and antennas up there, and my cell phone boosters and Wi-Fi extenders, and there's SIM cards I can swap out or reprogram, and there's a lot of reason to go up there. And plus, just maintenance. You should go up and check your roof and replace any caulk that needs caulking, and... Anyway, I got a ladder, so I'm pretty cool with that.
And you're very excited about
it. Yeah, I'm really glad to have it. It's interesting, because I've always wondered, because I looked at it, and it's, wait, it only goes to halfway down the back side. How am I going to step up there? But there's a second section that stows away very neatly in a storage cabinet, and I just bring that out and pop that on and can climb up. So we did that, and We did, what else did we
do? You added for the water.
Oh, yeah, we did a really good tweak. Richard McGinnity is a fellow RVer, and we saw him at a rally in May. And he also has a Leisure Travel Vans Unity, and he showed me what he did. The one thing, when you empty the fresh water tank, the drain, the little valve you have to turn is about in the middle of the van underneath it. So you have to literally lie on the ground, full prone ground the ground, and crawl underneath a little bit to reach that valve. That's kind of messy. So Dick showed me what he did back in May, and they basically put a little PVC expansion pipe on, put a brace on, a little support to hold it, and brought it out closer so I can just kind of bend down now and reach a little bit under behind the tire and drain that fresh water tank, which is something that nobody does enough in the summer, particular when, you know, it can get pretty skunky in there.
Well, now, did the dealership tell you that they've done that a lot?
I don't
know. Or just do a couple?
I think they've done a couple, but okay. They did a really good job with it. And I think I did put a picture of that up on Instagram already. So I'm glad to have that. But the importance of draining that fresh water tank, a lot of people just, you know, they leave it in from trip to trip. It gets hot and it gets skunky and, you know, bacteria can develop. So whenever you finish a trip, and you're going to have it sitting someplace for a couple of days, empty that fresh water, and then put new water in it before your next trip, and I think you'll be happy. So that's what we did. And then this week, after this camp out here at the Holly Recreation Area, we're heading south to Ohio and then a little east to Lake Erie. Actually, they call it Lakeside, Ohio.
Yeah.
And it's a Chautauqua-type place. I don't know what Chautauqua means, but we know that the big one is in New York,
mm-hmm.
And this is the second biggest. It's kind of like a family resort and conference center. They have entertainment every night. They have lectures about the arts and religion, and I don't think they do anything on politics, but they teach you how to do all sorts of stuff, with sailing lessons and wooden shoe exhibitions. Wooden boat exhibitions. I'm thinking of Holland, Michigan. That's where the wooden shoes, the Dutch are there in Holland. But wooden boats. So it's a pretty neat place.
Sailing, tennis.
Yeah. So, and they have a campground. A lot of people stay in cottages. There's a hotel on the property. And we have heard about that from some friends and wanted to go earlier this summer. And a couple things came up and we couldn't do it. So we are going this week. So that's going to keep us pretty busy. And then back home, and then we pack up for some real extended travel down south and across a bunch of different states. So lots of places, lots of things to do. It's still summertime traveling for us.
It is.
Even though school has started in the south. All right, that's what we're up to. We want to give a shout-out to our reviewer of the week. And this is from a reviewer named Keith Hafer. Keith Hafer, maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong. Maybe it's Keith Offer. I don't know. Keith Hafer, I'm going to call it. And he left this wonderful 5-star review of the podcast on iTunes. He said, "We currently are not RV owners. However, we're in the process of considering an RV lifestyle. There are, of course, a great many things to learn. Even though we had a travel trailer many moons ago, a lot's changed. The RV podcast has helped me to approach this with a broader perspective. I thought I had in mind what I wanted to do, but their style has got me thinking. There are several things about this particular show. First, the show is that it is well-rounded. It's a combination of news, interviews, places to visit, industry trends, and so much more. They pack it with excellent information that's entertaining. I'm often listening, and then suddenly it's over. Second, they're not over-advertised. I like their commitment to keeping a healthy balance of sponsorship and information for the listener. Third, they seem very personable, and Mike and Jennifer work well together in the podcast. I like their honesty and family orientation. There are a lot of podcasts I've found on RV Living. This is one I look forward to the next weekly episode. I'm hoping someday my wife and I will get a chance to meet them in person. They have a YouTube channel and website that adds to the overall learning." Well, thank you. That's from Keith Hafer. We really appreciate those kind words, Keith, and your review. Isn't that nice?
Very nice.
It kind of makes it all worthwhile. We invite you to, dear listener, please do the same. We love those 5-star reviews. And if you would leave us a review and a rating on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app you happen to listen to us on, We so appreciate the feedback, and we read every single one of them.
News. Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, inside information and trends that shape the RV lifestyle. Here's the RV news of the week.
A story captured the hearts of many who saw it last week about a grandson in his late 30s taking his grandma in her late 80s camping in all 61 national parks so that she can see the world. The grandma has been a widow for 20 years, worked minimum wage jobs, and never saw much of the country, which was a regret. So her grandson set out to turn that around, seeing the country's national parks.
What a great thing. What a great thing. Okay, we got lots of animal news now for the rest of the RV news. Let's start with this in southern Arizona. A bobcat attacked a four-year-old girl who was camping with her family in southern Arizona last week. When the girl's family heard her screams, they all ran out to help, and they were also attacked as they fought the animal off. Officials came out to try and trap the animal but were unsuccessful. 15 people ended up being treated for rabies as a precaution, and the wildcat, as of this writing, was still on the loose.
Don't pet wild bison. Seems obvious, right? But apparently it's not. Last week, a picture went viral showing a man petting a wild bison at Yellowstone National Park. The photo led the Park Service to issue statements warning the public not to do this. Recently, a 9-year-old girl was tossed into the air and injured by a wild bison after getting too close. And at Theodore Roosevelt National Park, a 17-year-old was gored by one. Bison are wild animals who can kill. The recommendation is to stay far away and definitely do not touch.
And one more animal story, and this one from the Truth is Stranger Than Fiction category. Federal officials in Kentucky are investigating a report that a man fired a gunshot while camping at Mammoth Cave National Park, an incident that another camper says was prompted by an alleged sighting of Bigfoot. Mammoth Cave said law enforcement rangers responded early Sunday to a report of a person with a firearm at one of the Kentucky Park's backcountry campsites. Brad Ginn told news outlets that he and his girlfriend were camping nearby and they were awakened about 1 a.m. by a man with his son, and the man said they were going to investigate strange noises that he kept hearing. Ginn said he heard the gunshot minutes later, and then the man returned to say Bigfoot had emerged from the woods, and so he fired at him. Ginn said that he and his girlfriend decided to leave and report the incident. Park spokesman Molly Shore says an investigation is underway and the park is very safe to visit, that Bigfoot has caused no problems there that they know of. So I guess you hear all sorts of things out there in the woods.
I think they were wise to leave.
I think they were too. This part of the podcast is brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing and powerful premium electric bikes, and now with free shipping and a special discount to listeners of the RV podcast. We really like Rad Power Bikes. We're big fans of e-bikes. They seem to be just made perfect for RVers. It's just a great way to enhance that RV lifestyle and get you around the campsite, do some exploring. Rad Power Bikes, they make a bunch of different e-bike models that fit every possible rider want or need you'll have, whether it's a mountain bike style, a fat tire bike, a city bike, cruiser types mod, or the step through model. That's the one Jennifer has. I have the city bike, the beach cruiser style. All of them can reach 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. They even have a model that folds up real small, so you can unfold it and it stores very easily. All their models will give you the choice to ride pedal free with throttle or use 5 different levels of pedal assist for an added boost, or you can combine the two. Rad Power Bikes are perfect for people who want to get back into riding or maybe recovering from surgery. You can go 20 to 40 miles on a single charge. They charge fast as well. You can charge them right from your RV. They're very simple to assemble. They send you to them partially assembled. You just got to tighten a couple of bolts and follow their instructions. Very easy to do. And shipping is free, which is a big deal. But if you mention RV Lifestyle at checkout, you'll get an additional $75 off, plus that free shipping. And remember, they are probably half the cost of comparable bikes because they deal directly with the consumer. Check them out yourself, radpowerbikes.com.
Questions?
You've got them.
Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers.
Here's one of our questions of the week.
Hey, Mike and Jennifer. I was looking ahead to next summer and planning a trip to Canada. And there's so many things to see up there. I'm really excited about it. But it's going to be a multi-week trip. I know you guys have been up there a few times. Have either of you ever had to fill a prescription in Canada? My wife and I are always taking things. So how does that work? Do I need to bring a paper copy of the prescription? If we're up there for several weeks, there's a chance we might have to get something. Anyway, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Okay, good question. And I think that's the first time we've been asked that. Now, we've had problems when we've been on the road in the U.S. and we've needed to fill a prescription. And you've had no problem.
No problem whatsoever.
Yeah. And we go to a national chain.
Yeah. So did CVS, you check Walgreens. Into Canada?
Yes, I did. And here's the deal. Canadian provinces require that any Canadian pharmacy dispense medication pursuant to a valid prescription authorized by a Canadian medical practitioner. So U.S. prescriptions received by a Canadian pharmacy have to be approved by a Canadian physician who then issues a Canadian prescription prior to it being filled. That sounds a lot more complicated than it is. It's referred to as co-signing, and they view that as a kind of, think of it as an additional review of your health profile. They insist that one of their licensed, Canadian licensed practitioner determine the suitability of the recommended treatment. One of the reasons why is because Canadian drugs are so much cheaper than the U.S. drugs, and many U.S. people were going over to Canada and trying to buy them. So to be clear, a patient or a doctor in the U.S. only has to send in a prescription. You don't have to worry about finding a Canadian practitioner. The pharmacy will take care of the approval process from there, but it might take you just a few hours more. Generally, U.S. pharmacies will not transfer your prescription to a Canadian pharmacy. If you decide to buy medication from a pharmacy in Canada, you have to have a prescription with a U.S. pharmacy. You're most likely going to have to request a new prescription from your doctor. So I would, usually if you just call your doctor, they can fax it in, that's fine. I don't think it would hurt to bring written records with you of your prescriptions and to take them to a Canadian pharmacy because they're used to this. But just be aware that their law requires that they also be co-signed by a Canadian doctor, and they'll take care of that. They will do it.
I'm sure it happens a lot.
It does. So check that out. But that's a great question, and you can do some searching on the internet. That's what I basically did to answer your question, and you'll find lots of information on it. But you do need your doctor to send that prescription to the Canadian pharmacy. I mentioned that we are headed to Lakeside of Ohio, this Chautauqua-like place on Lake Erie. And I guess last week, and a local pastor down there who must be an RVer, he listened, and he had a great suggestion for us. So listen up.
Hello, this is Pastor Matt Blau, and I'm calling because I'm a pastor here in Ohio at the West Ohio Conference, and we always have our annual conference there at Lakeside, Ohio. It's a wonderful place, but there is a fish restaurant called the Jolly Rogers. It's in Port Clinton. It's not far from Lakeside at all. It is not a very big place, but if you like fresh perch, seafood and chips, waffle fries, they are just wonderful. And I would just encourage you to stop by Jolly Rogers Restaurant. It's not a big place. It's not a fancy place, but it has excellent fish and chips, fresh perch. Just thought I'd let you know.
Fresh perch. We haven't had fresh perch in a long time.
No, we grew up in Bay City, Michigan, where there were lots of perch when we grew up.
Yep. And we
perch fishing.
Friday night perch dinners were the big thing up there. Mm-hmm. So we have to go try that. Jolly Rogers. Didn't we hear about that from somebody else?
I think we did. But isn't it nice for someone to call in and tell us where we should go eat and what we should go see and what we should do? I like that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we get those calls often, and I just thought I would throw that one out there. I'm going to put them all up and share them with everybody because I think that it's kind of fun when people offer places to go. And we've been trying to follow your examples when people say that, that we were just down in Nashville and somebody sent me a note and told me about that donut place, the
So we went there.
Five Daughters Donut or Three Daughters. I forget the name of it. And those were monster donuts. And that was fun. So we love getting them. And we'll put those too. And we have one more question. This came in by our RV Lifestyle Facebook group. And if you're not a member of that, I'll put a link in the show notes. Just go to the show notes for this episode. It's kind of like an outline of the whole talk with links to everything, including all the news stories we had. You can find more information on that just by clicking those links. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/255, rvlifestyle.com/255. But our Facebook group, somebody named Beth saw our video that we had on YouTube this week about how we use Anytime Fitness when we travel around. She said, I just watched your YouTube, your RV Lifestyle video on a fitness club, and I'm wondering if anybody has parked the night in the parking lot after working out. And that sparked a pretty lively discussion on the Facebook group. With many people saying, well, why not? It's 24 hours. You're out in front of the business. You're a member there. You should be able to stop there. What do you think?
I don't think so, because somebody owns that parking lot, and I'm sure the police go through and monitor, and I think you probably have to have some kind of special permission from whatever city.
Yeah, you know,
area that you're
in. It all depends on how the city, you know, zones everything. I would think that it's probably not a good idea to just stay there overnight.
I think maybe we need to make a call in to maybe a couple of different places.
Well, I think if you ask the manager of the club, although the managers of many of those fitness clubs are not there 24 hours a day, they're only there in the morning. But, you know, use common sense. Don't just think that's your right. I think 9 times out of 10, you'd be just fine.
All right.
But one time out of 10, you're not. You're going to have
somebody's going to knock on your door in the middle of the night. Yep. You could think of at a grocery store or a shopping mall. You could think any place out there that you wanted to spend the night. I don't think you can do it.
And how much do you know about the neighborhood that shopping mall's in?
I don't think that's got anything to do with it.
Well, is it a safe neighborhood I'm thinking about? You know, you don't want people knocking on your door at all. But, in an unsafe neighborhood, that's even worse. So I guess we would not do that.
I think maybe because of homeless people, they don't want to encourage people to park in parking lots wherever they feel like it.
Yeah, they don't.
For the night.
Yep. Yeah. It's a national problem.
And so going to the bathroom and things like that.
You're probably better off in a smaller community like that. Many times in a smaller community, if you just go to the local police and say, "Hey, we're self-contained. We're not going to cause any mess or anything. Can we just park? Where can we park and spend the night?"
I think that would work.
They'll all let you. But in most of these fitness clubs are in shopping centers, and some of them are busy. You know, if they're busy 24 hours, you probably are fine if they have a lot of traffic in there. But at 3 in the morning, you're going to stand out with your RV parked in a parking lot, and they know all they have to do is look in the window, and they can see you're not in there working out. So look for signage. You know, many parking lots have figured this all out and will say no overnight stays or no parking over 4 hours or something like that. So you want to respect the local laws, but I just don't think that would be a really great idea.
Good. I'm glad. I thought you were going to say it was a good idea. No, I don't think you can.
No, I don't think you should either. That's something we wouldn't do. I'll just say that. Okay. Hey, if you have a question you'd like us to answer, a comment or some place we should check out, you know, use the voicemail message like you've heard the others do in this episode. We have a special number. It's 24/7. You just call it up, 586-372-6990, 586-372-6990. And if you're driving and you can't write that down, if you just go to our travel blog, rvlifestyle.com. On the right-hand side, I got that number, and it's prominently displayed. You won't have any trouble finding it at all. And we invite you to add your voice to the podcast. We love hearing from you. All right, this part of the podcast brought to you by Battle Born Batteries, makers of quality, safe, reliable lithium batteries. They can be installed in just about every RV. Mentioned that we were in Holland, Michigan this week, and we ran into a couple of our regular listeners, Dan and Nancy, and they have the same kind of RV we have. They have a Leisure Travel Vans Unity FX, and they were getting the exact same battery system. They heard us advertise for Battleborne, and they ordered the same system that the Wendlands had. And it was funny because ours was getting that ladder installed and everything right next to it. It was their unit, and they put them on. And I've heard a couple of times today from him how happy he is with that lithium system, how he's been boondocking, testing it out. And it's just great. It lasts all night long. The solar then tops it off during the day, and then it just repeats itself the next day. It's kind of cute because Dan sent me about 3 or 4 texts. I just ran the coffee maker and ran the microwave and didn't take any power at all. That's because he's using lithium batteries from Battleborne Batteries. Battleborne makes just first-rate batteries. And whether you have a Class A, a Class C, or a Class B van, whether you have a travel trailer or a cab over, whatever it is, they're experts in those types of RVs. They offer different size lithium batteries, deep cycle lithium models with solutions that will literally drop into any size travel trailer or motorized RV, and they're all protected by a 10-year guarantee. And they can match that lithium power system with the right cabling, the right inverter, the right charger, the right solar controller. We have the whole smear from them. We have 2 of their batteries, and we've had them put in a new inverter, a new charger, a new solar and it just all works well. It all works with Bluetooth as well. I can just call up my app on my phone and see exact state of my power system. Jennifer and I have this Battleborne system in our RV, and so does our new friends Dan and Nancy, and I think they will agree that you can rely on it for your boondocking adventures. If you're interested in learning more, go to rvlifestyle.com/lithium. That's rvlifestyle.com/lithium, and you can connect with the Battleborne experts on what's needed for your RV.
RV Podcast. You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the RVPodcast.com travel blog. And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast. Just click the send voicemail button on RV Podcast.
All right, our guest on the interview of the week segment now is our friend Bob Zagami. I'm delighted to have Bob on the show. He's a dear friend of ours. I got to say that in full disclosure, right?
He certainly is.
And he is a dear treasure to the RV industry. The thing that I appreciate so much about Bob, although he is the executive director of the New England RV Dealers Association, he is a co-host of a popular podcast that they do every week, an interview show. And he is, he's got the back of RV dealers, but he tells it like it is. He is a straight-talking guy, and if you want a good feel on the state of the industry and the state of RV dealers around the country, Bob is the guy you want to talk to. And so I asked him to come on the program because there's so much confusion about what you should expect at an RV dealership. There's a lot of skepticism. There's a lot of dealers that have some pretty shady reputations, and sometimes that falls upon all of them in the industry, and that's not fair either. So what are we to make of RV dealers? And Bob is going to walk us through some of the most common problems and issues, and offer also some suggestions about what you need to know about RV dealers. Bob Zagami joins us right now. Bob, how's New England these days?
It's incredible. It's 91 degrees. I'm sitting out on my deck of my park model up in Maine and just enjoying the scenery. So it's been hot like the rest of the country.
One of the things I really like about Bob Zagami is that you know what RVing is all about. You just came back from a bunch of 4,000 or 5,000 mile trip, didn't you?
I did, Mike. I've been RVing for 40 years, and everything from a pop-up to a motorhome. We love it. We love the lifestyle. We love the passion of it. And I did just come back from a visit to Winnebago in Iowa. They loaned me their new Bolt, which is a energy-efficient hybrid. I wouldn't call it a hybrid, but lithium-ion batteries, 200-watt solar panels on the roof. Totally self-sustaining, but it was one of the more comfortable motorhomes. And granted, it's a Class B.
Yeah.
One of the more comfortable motorhomes that I've driven. Well-insulated, easy to drive. it could be a popular unit.
Yep, it is. Well, I want to have you put on your professional hat and help us understand a couple things about RV dealers. You know, when things go wrong, it's always the dealers that get kicked. And when I look at some of the stuff like on our Facebook RV Lifestyle group, the complaints about dealers, and I feel duty-bound to get the other side of the story. And I think there's a lot of information out there about dealers that are wrong or maybe are based on things that happened in the past. But let's jump in and talk about the things that RV dealers would like us to know. And the first question always has to be service. I'm not saying anything out of school that we don't already know, but service has always been an issue in RVs, particularly now in the midst of the boom. Help people understand why when they call, they may not get service for 3 or 4 weeks or longer.
Well, it's a great question. I appreciate you asking it, but we should probably tell your viewers that don't know me, what my background, just a little bit about my background. I actually have been an RVer for 40 years, as I said, so I've been a consumer for a long time, but I've also been a consultant in the industry, but I also run the New England RV Dealers Association. So I'm the executive director, and we have 35 dealers. So I spend every week with dealers throughout New England. I have dealers in all 6 New England states. And that service question is one that comes up all the time, whether we're talking on some of the social media channels and platforms that you and I follow, or when we do it together, when we do seminars. I think the biggest misunderstanding that a lot of people have, especially if they're new to RVing, everybody wants to compare the RV industry to the automobile industry. And you can buy a Chevy in Boston and go to California, have a problem, and that dealer will treat you exact as the dealer in Boston. He has to, she has to, or they will lose their franchise. They have franchise laws that say you will do this, you will warranty this, you will cover this customer in 20 hours, you will get the part in 48 hours. Very strict guidelines. But we sell 18 to 20 million cars a year. We sell 500,000, a little bit less than that now, RVs a year. So it's not apples and oranges. And the other issue is that cars and trucks and, you know, their trucks are pretty much automated. A lot of the manufacturing operations have been replaced with robots and numerically controlled equipment that is very precise, more precise than a human being. Every RV is made by a human being. There is very little automation. There's some automation on cutting out panels and windows and doors, but it's a human handmade instrument. So when you take it to a dealer, and a thing that I like to caution customers on, prospects on, develop a relationship with a dealer, even if it costs you a little bit more money, because you are going to want to have a friend at the RV dealership. Because it is not unusual, and we know this, and the dealers know this, and they tell people this. It is not unusual for you to buy an RV in Massachusetts and go to California, and let's say it's XYZ company, and go to an XYZ dealership in California, and they look at you like you got 4 eyes, and they say, well, you know, we can get you in 3 or 4 months, because we're going to service our own customers right now. Number one, they can do that, because there are no franchise laws. That doesn't always make the consumer happy. But in many cases, they have to do that because we have a tremendous shortage of technicians in the industry. And the ones that they do have, they've got to put on the most volatile cases, which in most cases are their customers. They've got the relationship with them. So what I would wish, now, that is not an excuse for bad service. And what I caution our dealers on, and I ask them, and I do it, you know, when we do the seminars, if we as an industry, forget whether it's New England or California or New York, if we as an industry would manage the expectations of an RV buyer from their initial exposure to our industry, we would not have 2/3 of the problems that we see out there right now. But the consumers get enamored with the product, they get emotional on it, and they buy it, and they haven't done their homework. They just have not done their homework as to how this industry works compared to automobiles, and the only thing they have to compare it to is automobiles.
Now,
so this whole aspect. Go ahead, Mike.
Back to the service guys. So, I'm RVing across someplace in another state, and my water pump goes out. I've heard this over and over, and you pull into an RV dealer, and hey, I think my water pump's gone. And they say, yeah, bring it back 2 weeks from Thursday, And meantime, right. that person is stuck there. And so they get right. angry, and the dealer gets bad press. But I guess I'm trying to look at the dealer's side here, and they are triaging everything that comes in, just like a hospital emergency room. And while that may be important, it's not as important, say, as somebody who has a propane leak, which could explode, right? So help us right. understand what goes on in a service shop that would help people get that.
Well, you used a good term because it is triage. You know, you only use these things a few months out of the year, a few weeks, and you always want it to be right, and maybe you haven't done the right preventive maintenance, and then all of a sudden you're out somewhere and you have a problem. So, yeah, probably 90% of what the dealers see in the course of a day is a triage and a problem. Something breaks.
So,
and then you're at the mercy of the dealers. I will tell you, I have a couple of service centers, one in particular that I know of, that builds, he's on Cape Cod, so anybody on Cape Cod in the summertime is on vacation. And when their RV breaks, this dealer allocates 2 bays of his operation for daily work, just for people who show up and need emergency service.
That's
and
dealer.
He's very well known.
I'd like to do business with that dealer. Well, yeah, because so many don't do that.
But here's the problem. He's not really a dealer. He's a service center and a parts and accessory store. He doesn't want to sell new units. He doesn't want to sell used units. He's got all certified techs. Now, how many of those are in the country? I don't know. But I know when we have problems here in New England, I have a couple of places like that I can send people to. And people do find me when they have emergencies. I must get 3 or 4 calls a week on my cell phone, and people are stranded and on the side of a highway, and they have no idea what to do.
Let me.
We don't advertise our service.
I know I got a couple other questions before we run out of time, and I want to just clear a couple of things up here. Number one, there is a service tech shortage. There has been all 7 years that we've been doing this. Is the industry finally moving to build more service techs, to get pay up a little bit and to hire more techs?
It's a double-edged sword, quite honestly. We are. We've got a new initiative with the RV Technical Institute in Elkhart to train retirees, to train people that are coming out of the service, men and women who are looking for a career, and even down to the high school level. So we're putting in place. But that's going to be a little bit longer term to get people in, get them trained, and what have you. Locally, our people do try to hire more people. But one of the issues in our industry, and, you know, it's known, but we're not paying the techs enough money. And,
no.
And I talk to my dealers about this, and I talk to people in the industry about this. They can pound their chest all they want about all these great programs. But if we train these people and then push them out on the street and somebody wants to pay them $12 or $15 an hour to work on a $200,000 motorhome, they're not going to get too excited about that. So we're moving in the right direction.
But it's going to take some time.
10 years ago.
It's going to take some time. Yep. It's
right.
also a seasonal business. They're not busy, I don't think, unless you're in a, you know, into a place where it's always nice weather. But it is seasonal. We do understand that. But pay is a big issue. I want to, and we could talk about service for a long time, what the industry does and doesn't do. Frankly, yep. I just recommend people, when they break down on the road, call a mobile RV tech. Those guys know everything, and they're usually there to fix it wherever you are. So I always recommend that. But I want to talk about go ahead.
Before you do, let me add to that, because I agree with that 100%. I take it one step further. I say to people, and they say, where do I find them? And they are difficult to find because they're so cherished. They're busy. They don't need to go looking for business. What I tell people, if somebody around the area where you are doesn't know one, call your local campground.
Yep.
Every campground has a list on the wall of mobile techs who will come into the campground to fix emergencies of their customers. They have to, because they don't want a customer who can't get service and ruins their vacation in a campground, because the first person they're going to blame is the campground owner, not the RV dealer that sold it.
Plus, they want to get those people out of those lots and turn them over and get that RV working.
Right. So. Get a hold of the closest campground and say, look, I'm really stuck. Give me the name of somebody that will come running over here and bail me out.
All right, here's a question I'm asked all the time. How much wiggle room is there in a retail price when somebody does shopping? Again, they make the same assumption that it used to be in the auto industry when you could really bargain. But generally, should people expect to pay full sticker, or is there what's a ballpark that they can wiggle around for negotiate a cut?
Well, let me put it this way, Mike. I've been RVing for 40 years, and I've had many RVs. Never have I paid MSRP, and I've never met anybody who did. So it is a discounted price. It is negotiable, and it depends if you're not trading in a unit. 25-30% off of the manufacturer's suggested list price is a fair price for the consumer and still allows the dealer to make good money on it. When you start to throw a trade in there are so many variables, you almost can't provide guidance because you don't know the age, you don't know how well the customer took care of it, you don't know any hidden damage. I'm always amazed when I go to shows and people buy at the show and they give them a trade in on their product. They haven't sight unseen. Somebody shows them a couple of pictures and that's it. Now, that is, there's a fine print that says it's subject to an actual inspection when we see the coach. Well, they want to sell the product at the show. When that coach shows up, and if it's not in good shape, they may or they may not stick the deal. I mean, they may stick with it, and they may just say no. So it's tough. There is wiggle room, and you have to do your homework.
But expecting 25% off is not a bad way to start the negotiation, right?
No, and quite honestly, there are dealers in the country, I don't have any in mind that do it, but there are some pretty large dealers in the country that tell you up front, everything on their lot starts at 25% off this price.
All right.
Starts.
Now, when you drive that new RV off the dealer's lot, how much does it depreciate?
Oh, maybe 20-25%.
Day one.
Again, depends on what you what you bought it for. If you buy it really well, then it's a lot less than that. If you're on the high end of the price tag, it could depreciate significantly. Again, it's not a car, and the resale, when you look out there at resale values, people say, well, we'll just get the Kelley Blue Book price. Well, the Kelley Blue Book and the Napa used car prices, they're pretty rock solid. You can bet that they're in there. But when you look at their books for RVs, and dealers have them and consumers can see them, but they give you it's a wide range of price between the lowest, the lowest wholesale and highest wholesale and average price, because there's so many different options that you can put in an RV. I mean, cars are cars. I don't know. You're not as old as me, Mike, but when I first bought my first car, they gave you a piece of paper and you picked out all the options that you wanted, and then you sent it to the factory, you waited a while, and then it came, and it got delivered. Well, they don't do that anymore. They buy hundreds of cars, they put them on the lot, and almost all of them are the same. One's got a different color, one's got a different stereo. So the trade-in prices can hold much more authentic with a car than they ever will with a used motorhome.
All right.
And it's crazy.
So depreciation is a huge factor. Now, where do dealers really make their money? Do they make it? We've heard that they make their money in selling, upselling you to extended warranties, all the little additional insurances that you can pick up. And I don't want you to bite the hand that feeds you there, but help us all understand. How much is just plain upsell trying to make what they can, or how much are good stuff?
Well, I think that they try to keep the coach separate from the upsell once you get in to finance and insurance, because obviously they want you to buy the coach first. And then depending on how you're going to use it, depends on, there's several things that once you get to the finance and insurance person, they're going to talk to you about an extended warranty. Because again, these things are handmade, and warranties are misunderstood in this industry. A lot of times people don't read the warranties, but you may be getting a warranty from the manufacturer on the coach itself, but you may be subject to individual warranties on the components inside. The refrigerator might have to go to the refrigerator person. The stove might have to go to that. So you've got a lot of individual pieces. So if you're going to be using it a lot, then you got to look at an extended warranty. They are worth the money because, as you see in these forums, things break. And you want some additional coverage. You might want fabric protection if you have dogs or kids that like to use them for trampolines. Some additional insurance options that you might want to have. But the caution I tell everybody is read before you sign. Don't come to the bank crying after the fact. And somebody says, well, you know, it's right here. And it's on page 45, paragraph 3, section B. And you said, who the hell reads that stuff? Well, guess what? This is probably your second biggest expense besides your house. You better read every piece of paper and understand what the warranties are and what you have to do to adjudicate any warranty claims. But you can protect yourself on all this stuff. Now, having said that, there is a responsibility, and sometimes it's maligned and people don't take it seriously. But buyers of RVs have a responsibility. The first one is to read that paperwork and make sure you understand. Don't leave it up to, and these days, you know, when was the last time you talked to somebody that read the software agreement that they programmed new software into their computer?
Same thing.
Nobody's read one of those in 15 years. Right. But you have to do it. And then it says, but a lot of this stuff is depending on preventive maintenance. And here again, I go back to, do we manage the customer's expectations the right way? Do we tell the customer that twice a year you have to get up and inspect that roof? That twice a year, you know, you have to check your lug nuts after every trip. What, you know, we won't lose. My argument is we will get more sales if we treat the customer like an adult, manage the expectations, and say, look, these things are handmade. These things break. These things need maintenance. You just don't let it sit for 6 months and say, honey, let's go to Yellowstone and hop in the motorhome and you never make it because you got tire problems or you got something that breaks down. So there's caution on both sides of that.
All right. Before we run out of time, last question. Give somebody an advice on how to pick a dealer. How do you pick a dealer? There's great big, huge chains. There's big multi-store corporations. There's mom and pop shops. What are a couple things that people should look for when they are choosing an RV dealer to buy from?
And I think that's an excellent question, Mike. But I'd like to say you don't pick a dealer, you pick people. You have to have people that you're comfortable with. You can find the greatest people in the world in a mega dealer that's got 50 locations across the country. 49 of them might be terrible, but you might find the one that is absolutely incredible. It's got dedicated employees. It's been there a long time. You can find a mom-and-pop dealer who will take care of you like you could never imagine. I mean, I've got dealers that they only sell one product line, and they've been selling one product line for 50 years, and there's no high pressure. It's what matches up with the personality of the buyer. And I always said that I've been in sales for over 50 years. There's a buyer for every sales rep. A sales rep can find somebody to buy something that they're selling. And there's a product for everybody. So it depends on how well you can articulate what you want, how much homework you've done, how receptive that salesperson is. Are they just trying to sell you a unit? I would argue you shouldn't even look at a unit for at least an hour when you go into a dealership. Because unless you have that discovery presentation where the salesperson can ask you the questions that might dictate the units that they show you. You know, I've seen it happen. People go on a lot and they give them the keys. They say, look at all our units are open. Go ahead, help them look. And when you see something you like, come and tell me. Well, if that's the first time buyer, they don't understand destination camping. They don't understand the Class B. They don't understand how an ultralight is made, lesser materials than a large quality trailer. So until you talk to the person and say, tell me, you know, I got to know, and I tell people this during the seminars, we have to know your budget. You have to be honest with them. If you can only spend $200 a month, tell them that. And I'm not going to show you a 45-foot diesel pusher. But we have to know how many kids. We have to know, do you like to cook at the campground Are you going to eat at McDonald's every night? You go through the same, almost the same kinds of questions as when somebody buys a house. And I always come back to that example because it is a big investment. You wouldn't go to an open house for a $500,000 condo if you could only afford $250,000 one. So the same thing is there, but people don't understand RV. So it's new, it's exciting, so they get caught up in that excitement. So you got to sit with the salesperson, and if the salesperson isn't willing to do that, I tell people, get up and walk out. If you're not comfortable with a deal, get up and walk out, because right down the street, you're going to find one that you love. That doesn't mean there's something wrong with that first dealer. There's just an incompatibility between the buyer and the seller. And if you're in that kind of a situation as a buyer, you don't spend your money.
That's great advice, Bob Zugami. As always, I so appreciate your insight and your wisdom, and I know our listeners to the RV podcast will too. Bob, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Mike, thanks very much. And by the way, a quick note, I want to congratulate you on your new ebook series. I downloaded purchased your Boondocking one and the one for the Michigan Upper Peninsula, and you and Jennifer are doing an absolutely incredible job with those, and this is not a paid commercial, but I'm looking forward to all the new ones, and I know you put out one today on the Adirondacks, but congratulations, because you guys really hit a home run with those.
Well, thank you, Bob. We'll see you down the road, and we'll see you, I think, at RV. Well, we'll see you at the Hershey RV show in September.
We'll see you at Hershey.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's our friend Bob Zugami, and you can check the website. We'll put a transcript of the interview. But some really straight talk and good advice from Bob. He is the executive director of the New England RV Dealers Association. Thank you, Bob, for being on the program. The interview of the week brought to you by our friends at SunshineStateRVs.com, where every new motorhome is delivered to the customer free anywhere in the country. At Sunshine State RVs, you will find a huge selection of motorhomes, new and used. Now, their used inventory is the biggest inventory you'll find of used from the early 90s up till the present model. You won't find more on a lot anywhere in North America than you will at SunshineStateRVs.com. But they're also a new dealer. They sell and specialize in small motorhomes, Class Bs, Class Cs. They've got the top brands. They are the number one dealer in the country for the Coachman Class B series. The Winnebago Travato is one of the new models they sell. They sell the Winnebago Era, other brands, American Patriot, the Fleetwood IROC, and more. If you are looking for a smaller RV, a Class B, a Class C, you need to either make a trip to sunny Gainesville, Florida, or check them out online. You can find their whole inventory online, SunshineStateRVs.com. Their used inventory, as I said, is huge, and they have used models in stock right now. All have been reconditioned. All of them have gone through a very thorough 172-point inspection. They've got brands like Pleasureway, Winnebago, Leisure Travel, Coachman, Used Road Treks, and many more. You check them out, SunshineStateRVs.com, and be sure and tell them that you heard about them on the RV podcast.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
And as we do every week at this time, time to check in with our Off the Beaten Path correspondents, Tom and Patty Burkett.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. We were sitting in our folding chairs on the front lawn, eating a lunch of egg salad sandwiches and grapes. Once in a while, a car would drive along the road in front of the cabin. Tom, in his usual melodramatic way, would wave his arm and say, "These aren't the droids you're looking for. Move along." And the cars would pass on by. This went on for a full half hour, although it was only two or three cars. It was a beautiful spring day with birds in the trees, wildflowers blooming, and elk grazing in the meadow across the road. And here we were enjoying lunch all by ourselves on the front lawn of the Jarvis Palmer Cabin in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, the most visited park in the USA, host to 11.5 million visitors last year.
Our campsite in the not-too-crowded campground nearby adjoined a fast-running creek, noisy with the spring runoff, and enjoyed enough of a breeze that the bugs stayed away. Granted, it was a bit of a pull to get here. The road from Interstate 40, just a dozen miles away, winds wickedly up and down along Cove Creek and through Cove Creek and Sal Patch gaps. Our Class B didn't have any trouble with it, but we were amazed that a full-size tourist bus made the trip each evening to bring photographers out to shoot the elk that gathered in the meadows.
This is Cataloochee, one of the most remote areas of the national park. It's a fertile valley, settled by Europeans in the early 1800s. 100 years later, there were two towns here, with schools and churches, stores and craft works, and many homes. The mountain forest had been totally cleared to make room for crops and pastures. Now, 100 years later still, the forest has reclaimed the settlements and the tilled land, leaving only a few historic buildings in the natural meadows that draw the area's biggest attraction, an elk herd, reintroduced to the park in 2001 after having been hunted to extinction when the settlers arrived.
Now they're back, hopefully for good. One evening, as we stood watching them emerge from the woods into the meadow at dusk, we chatted with Jane, the campground host, who also kept an eye on the nightly crop of lookers and photographers. A few years ago, she told us, one of the big bulls headed up over the mountain and wound up in downtown Cherokee. The rangers darted him and brought him back over here. 2 weeks later, he did the same thing. They darted him again and brought him back. A few weeks later, comes the call from the Cherokee that he's in town again, this time with a harem of three females he's brought with him. So they decided to let him be, and now there's a small herd over there, too. The elk have done well here.
The next morning, we were back at the meadow just after dawn, mostly to look for birds along the tree lines. Two trucks arrived, and park workers began unloading tools and lumber. The nearby Hiram Caldwell house, it seems, needed a new floor on the back porch, and they were here to take care of it. We visited with Mike, one of the Park Service camp carpenters, as he laid down new boards. I commented on his modern cordless tools and how different it must have been to work on this house when it was built. "Yep," he replied, "it must be a lot easier now than it was then. But I'll tell you what, when I get ready to cut these boards, I still do it by hand. Somehow the sound of a power saw just doesn't seem quite right out here."
As we walked along the road, spotting a variety of warblers passing through on their spring migration, we could hear the whoosh whoosh of Mike's saw slicing a clean edge on the new porch floor, and reckoned it was not so different than it might have been on a similar morning a century ago, out here in this long green valley, two ridges off the beaten path.
Traveling and celebrating the RV lifestyle. This has been the RV Podcast with journalist Mike Wendlin. Got a question for the next episode? Just click the send voicemail link on the RVpodcast.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Somewhere off the beaten path.
All right, thanks to our friends, the Burkitts, for still another great Off the Beaten Path report. And you can see a couple of photos and read that whole account if you want on the RVLifestyle.com travel blog. Show notes for this episode, you can find them, RVLifestyle.com/255. We've put links to almost all the things that we talked about, including a transcript of our interview with Bob Zagami a little while ago on the secrets of RV dealers. Hey, thank you guys so much for tuning in and listening. We hope to see you out on the road as Jennifer and I crisscross North America in our RV. Remember, if you'd like to have your voice heard and be a part of the podcast, you can record a voicemail message. Just click down on the RVLifestyle.com blog. You'll see the phone number right there prominently written for you. But just in case you need it, it's 586-372-6990. We'd love to have your questions and comments for next week's podcast. Till then, on behalf of my wife, Jennifer, and our dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendlin. We'll see you. Happy trails.